Today from New Jersey, it's SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm the birthday boy, Darren Patterson.
And I'm not the birthday boy, John Trumbull. Happy birthday, Darren!
Thank you! Yay! They say it's your birthday. I'm going to try not to be like those obnoxious people about their birthday, have to tell the world, ruin comedy shows, and just be like, look at me, I was born today, look at me, I'm special.
I think it's okay to raise a fuss, like, you know, on the day or whenever you're celebrating, if you're, you know, celebrating a couple days off, like we are. I think it's fine. If you get to the point where you're one of those people who's like, it's my birthday month, it's like, no, screw you.
I was born in this month, so this whole month is mine. It's my month. Me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll even say, like, you can have two small celebrations.
Ooh.
You know, okay. If it's a scheduling thing or something like that.
Okay, all right. You're tough but fair, John.
I like to think so. I like to think so. But, you know, I hope you're having a good birthday celebration. And, you know, this is our small part of it.
Oh, it is. Thank you so much. John, that's so sweet. It's so nice.
I got you literally what we do every week.
What's that?
A podcast recording.
Oh, that's right. Hey! How did you know? That's what I asked for.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and because it's your birthday, you asked to do another SNL episode that actually aired on your birthday back in 2003. So we're reaching back to season 28, episode 15, with host Salma Hayek and musical guest Christina Aguilera, who we will not really be talking about because her musical segments were not on Peacock.
Yeah, like, I mean, normally we were able to watch these episodes, these old episodes on, like, archives.
Yeah.
Websites, but they seem to have taken them down, so our only source to watch this is Peacock. And Peacock has, technically, I guess, all the SNL episodes, but they're all kind of chopped up and all the musical.
Yeah. I would assume it's usually because of musical clearances that, you know, they remove a sketch, or certainly they remove some of the musical guest segments. And honestly, that's fine because I've never liked Christina Aguilera's music, so I'm pretty happy I didn't have to watch her stuff.
Coming in hot. Okay.
Well, okay. Here's the thing that I don't. She's one of those singers who is always more interested in showing off her vocal range than singing the freaking song. So she like is singing every note all at once, and I find that so damn annoying.
I see what you mean. Like, it's like she does have a very powerful, I mean, as far as pop singers go, especially around this era, like the Britney Spears, Jessica Simpson era, she was one of the better singers. And I guess you could kind of tell that she knew it. Cause I do agree with you as someone, like, she's more like, it's more of a showy performance.
Yes. And I've never cared for that. And, you know, it's like, same with Mariah Carey. Don't, you know, sounds like a car alarm to me.
Yeah. God damn. All right. Wow. Coming in hot, there, trouble. But yeah, so there's no Aguilera performances we're going to speak of on this episode. And there's also one sketch that for some reason is not up on Peacock.
Yeah.
But we can talk about that later. But yeah, March 15th, 2023, the year I turned 26. Just a year before I met my now wife. So I'm trying to figure out what I was doing. I can pretty much assure you it involved alcohol and karaoke.
Well, what a great combo.
I can pretty much guarantee that. Like, now where I was doing this karaoke, that I do not know.
Were you still living in New York at this point?
I was, yeah. Still living at my folks' house. So, there was one place in Astoria, Queens, me and my friends like to go to, Karaoke Shout. There was a few places in the village that we went to.
I don't think I realized that you were such a karaoke freak.
The more I think about it, the more I was like, yeah, wow, I was really about that life. Like, there was that. There was a couple of really cool kind of places in Koreatown, like in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
Like, there was this one spot a buddy of mine found where you kind of take this elevator up. It's like a nondescript place. There was no sign out front, but you take the elevator up, you were able to BYOB and like rent a room for like dirt cheap. Like, I'm not sure if it was actually like on the up and up, but it was there.
I mean, it sounds kind of sketchy.
Yeah, whatever, man. Hey, you want to have fun or not?
Okay. All so, right. No, I mean, I'm not judging. I'm not judging. I'm just.
What are you, a cop? What are you, a cop?
I'm just saying that was probably a drug mule operation.
Maybe. Yeah. But, you know, I got to sing Sweet Caroline, so whatever.
Okay. All right. Was that your go-to?
No. I think I said my go-tos on this podcast. What was it? The Impression That I Get, mm-hmm. George Michael Faith, Glory Days was a big one. Hard to Handle. That was a good one. That was a good one.
Doing the Black Crowes there.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, like that. Oh, and of course, Rhythm of the Night, of course. But yeah, like I was out here. So yeah, so I definitely was doing. I think I was doing that when I turned 26. Just living a carefree life of drunkenly singing into microphones and just no, with no cares at all.
Now I'm trying to think, you know, what I was doing around about this time. This would have been the tail end of me living in Dover. I was just getting ready to move to Parsippany, New Jersey, where I'd be for like the next 20 odd years.
Okay.
So yeah, I was probably packing up a bunch of stuff around this time.
Okay. All right.
So well, yeah. You might be wondering, where was SNL at this point in time? Well, we'll tell you. As we said, this is season 28, episode 15, so they're just a little over halfway through the season. The repertory players at this point were Rachel Dratch, Jimmy Fallon, Tina Fey, Daryl Hammond, Chris Kattan, Tracy Morgan, Chris Parnell, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, and Horatio Sanz. Those were the regulars. Apparently, Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer had both just left the show. Ferrell at the end of the previous season, and Anna Gasteyer was on maternity leave, and she just decided not to return after that. And the show had also had five featured players, and we had Fred Armisen, Dean Edwards, Will Forte, Seth Meyers, and Jeff Richards. So
wow.
Three out of those five folks would have significantly long runs with the show.
Yeah, like I do. Yeah, like I vaguely remember Jeff Richards and Dean Edwards. Like Jeff Richards, I remember he had that one reoccurring character on the death segment in Weekend Update, like the drunk girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that now. Yeah. I remember he also did a Letterman impression.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that.
And Dean Edwards, I don't remember too much that he did at this point. I know he did an Obama, and he had another impression that we'll see in this episode. But he was one of those people who just didn't last too long in the show for whatever reason. I don't think either one was there for even as long as a year.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty short time. I do remember he did have like a Denzel Washington impression that I think he did like once. And I know we all think of Jay Farrow as the de facto Denzel impressionist, but yeah, I vaguely remember him doing it once. So like technically he did it before like Jay Farrow ever made it a big thing.
Okay.
But like two of them, I guess they didn't really, I'm not sure if they were let go or they decided to quit, but yeah, like neither one of them had a long tenure on the show.
I mean, since they left that early, I would assume it was not their choice.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to be positive here.
Yeah. Well,
but yeah, it's still wild to believe that there was a time where Will Forte and Chris Kattan were on the same cast at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I was saying before we started recording, you don't, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily associate these pairs of people together, but yeah, like a lot of these tenures did overlap. I mean, this is firmly in the era, like Lauren's been doing this for a while, where he kind of has a deep bench of people and he just kind of eases people in and out. So
yeah, and this is the transition era, because you see the old guard like Parnell and Kattan,
mm-hmm.
and Hammond and still there.
Yeah, a lot of those people who came in 95,
yeah,
they're still around, like, 7 years later.
Then you see the new the new crop, the new fresh-faced kids like Armisen and Seth Meyers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so weird to think of them as being the new guys.
Yeah, it's wild. It is wild.
So,
let's get into it. Cold open, shall we?
Okay, cold open. So as we said, Will Ferrell had left the show at this point. So the show was without a George W. Bush. So this was this kind of weird era where they rotated a few different George Bushes. And the person playing George Bush in this cold open, I think he was kind of underrated. Chris Parnell as George W. Bush. I thought he did a good job generally.
Yeah, in general, I think he did all right. I guess it's just so weird because, like, you see, like, when you see Will Ferrell, who did, I guess, you know, for the show, the definitive George W. Bush impression, like, anything else is going to kind of pale in comparison. Or people are just automatically going to compare it to that. Like, the same way people compare Mikey's Joe Biden to JAJ's Biden. It's like, well, it's all right.
Yeah. Or Sudeikis's Biden. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, it can be done. I mean, both Amy Poehler and Kate McKinnon did great Hillary Clinton's. Both Phil Hartman and Daryl Hammond did great Bill Clinton's. So, I mean, you can have more than one good impression of, you know, a prominent politician, but they never really quite found somebody who could match Will Ferrell as George W. Bush because he just nailed that character so much, you know?
Yeah, and you know, words like strategery, just coming up with thing, and he just found a sort of endearing, charming, goofy, buffoonish way to portray him that really just
kind of nailed the dumb frat boy persona.
Yeah, I mean, he had like a Broadway or was it off Broadway show?
I think it was Broadway. Yeah, where the You're Welcome America. Yeah, when Bush left office, I remember that. Yeah.
The Great White Way.
Yeah.
He took that impression too.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is March of 2003. So we're in the ramp up to the Iraq war. You know, we're getting ready to go to war with the wrong country.
Oh boy.
You know, this really did take me back to 2003. This episode was a real time capsule in certain ways. And Chris Parnell is George W. Bush saying, like, well, you know, I got some criticism. My last press conference wasn't hard hitting enough. So, you know, now I'm having all these journalists here and they can ask anything they want. And the joke is it's all journalists from like little rinky dink newspapers. Like the first person was from like a pineapple themed newsletter. I didn't write down the name of it, but.
Yeah, that was Maya Rudolph from the Pineapple Growers Trade Association Weekly.
Well, there you go.
Then we have Forte from the online matchmaker dating services.
Right, asking if Saddam Hussein like deserves love.
Can he find love too?
Yeah. We also had Fred Armisen as a priest from the Good Shepherd Church Bulletin. And then I like that we had Rachel Dratch's Helen Thomas, who was.
Yes.
Who, you know, if you're younger, you might not remember Helen Thomas. She was like a mainstay of the White House press room for years and years and years since the Kennedy administration. So it was a kick to see her in there.
We had Amy Poehler as like a teenager or a preteen from Highlights magazine.
Yeah. Remember when Amy Poehler played a lot of kids?
Yeah.
I was like, she doesn't really do that anymore, but that used to be like one of her specialties. She kind of like broke her eye teeth on Conan playing Andy Richter's little sister, and she had like some little girl characters on SNL. I remember she played Dakota Fanning back when Dakota Fanning was a child actress.
Like Amy playing kids was like a big thing. Like she would always like talk with a lisp, just wear braces. I get maybe because like Amy Poehler was kind of short.
She could just wear the pigtails and then suddenly she's like a little girl. I was just like, oh, wow, this takes me back. I haven't seen Amy Poehler do this sort of thing in forever. We had Horatio Sands as Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool News.
How kick is that? Is that new Matrix trailer, right?
It's so kick ass. we had Tina Fey popping up in a sketch. And she was from like, you know, some family's newsletter. And George W. like gives them condolences for the death of their pet.
Right. And I mean, I did like the running gag where Helen Thomas, Rachel Dratch's character, was like trying to ask real questions about, you know, bombing of innocent Iraqis for oil. And like, she kept on, she got like chloroformed.
Yeah. And then she's hit by a blow dart later by one of the Secret Service people. That was a funny visual. I like that.
And I liked at the very end where it has like, what is it, like Tracy Morgan from like Hobo News saying, "My question, can I have a dollar?"
Yeah. Follow up question, can I have another dollar? and Seth Meyers popping up doing a Tom Cruise impression. He was like from a Tom Cruise fan newsletter or something.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I remember that. I think even Seth Meyers said that, like that's one of his kind of go to impressions, like when he was like trying out for the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so this was like not long after Seth Meyers had gotten on the show, and I know, you know, he did a Tom Cruise impression. He did a great Hugh Grant impression.
Yes. Yeah, I remember seeing that. Yeah. It was pretty good.
And you know, and he does even more impressions these days because, you know, he goes to impression camp and he is always expanding his repertoire. So
is he?
Yeah.
Is
he? I mean, that's a thing that he does.
I did not know. Are you being for real right now or just?
It's a running gag on Late Night with Seth Meyers.
I see. Okay. I didn't know if
he's always talking about it. He's going to impression camp.
Got it. Okay. I didn't know if there was like a real thing or this is one of those big Trumbull jokes there.
It was kind of both.
Okay.
Got it.
All right.
It's kind of cool. Both. Thanks for going along with it for me. So.
Yes. And.
So, you know, a pretty decent cold open, I thought.
Yeah, not a bad cold open. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
The Bush administration was just, you know, being treated with kid gloves by the press in those days.
They found a way to do a political cold open, but still find some humor in it and have some fun with it and like, bring up some real life facts about, you know, the bombing.
I mean, doesn't the George W. Bush administration feel like almost innocent at this point? You know,
it really does.
I remember like 20 years ago, I was like, I hated them. I was like, oh, well, he's obviously the worst president ever and we'll never have anybody worse than him. And I'm just like, oh, John of 2003, you poor sweet summer child.
Were we ever so young? Of the way we were.
So yeah, so
let
that
it
was.
Be.
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird that I feel like this weird nostalgia for the early 2000s because they weren't all that great of a time. But
I remember like everybody hated Bush, or at least everybody, you know, in our liberal bubble, hated Bush.
And yeah,
like, you know, gas was a problem. I think price of gas was rising. It wasn't great, but yeah, but now we look back on it and I guess
it's always like a hindsight is 2020 thing. Things always seem simpler in retrospect because you know how things turned out. So
yeah, exactly. I think we even have like kids now who grew up, who were born in like, you know, the late 2000s or like 2010. They're looking back at that time now and be like, wow, it was such a simpler time. Life is so much better then. Like, I really did. There's like early 2000s nostalgia, I think, if you go online and you find, like, you know, the Gen Zers and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're always just going to find a nostalgia for like 20 years before.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be what the cycle is, you know, 20, sometimes 30 years before, but usually about 20.
Yeah. Like, I think for a while I thought like the 60s and 70s seemed like a pretty cool time to grow up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
If I went back in time and went there, I'd find might have had a few problems back then.
Yeah, I think the 1960s had a few problems. I don't think that's that radical of a stance.
What? But they had Hendrix, man.
Hendrix, but you know, they also had all sorts of, you know, race riots and Vietnam.
Oh, that? Oh yeah.
And, you know, and stuff.
Oh yeah, there was that, yeah, but, you know, Hendrix, man, come on.
But Hendrix, yeah, true.
Lit his guitar on fire. Come on, bro.
That's true. He played it with his teeth. Right. Hopefully not after fire. He set it on fire.
Nice.
But all right, back to the show. We have Salma Hayek doing the monologue. She comes out. She's in, look kind of casual. She's in like just a black top and jeans. Mm-hmm. And apparently this was in her run up to her Academy Award nomination for Frida. And I looked it up. That's the 75th Academy Awards, which were on March 23rd, 2003. So just about a week after this show. And she was up for Best Actress for playing Frida Kahlo. Didn't end up winning. Ended up losing to Nicole Kidman for The Hours, who was playing Virginia Woolf.
I haven't seen either one of those films.
I did see The Hours, and it was the maestro of its day. She had a big old fake nose. Like,
I remember that. I remember that being a big deal with people.
Yeah.
That people were like, oh, you just ugly yourself up and put a big nose on and you get an Academy Award.
Yep. Yep. You know, who knows? Maybe that was the inspiration for Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper saw The Hours and was like,
yeah,
yes.
And let's see, it was also Chicago won Best Picture. Adrian Brody won Best Actor for The Pianist. That was the year that he laid the big smooch on Halle Berry,
yes,
who was presenting the award. Catherine Zeta-Jones won for Chicago as Best Supporting Actress. Those are probably the big winners.
Chicago, I did like that quite a bit.
Oh, and Michael Moore won for Best Documentary Feature for Bowling for Columbine, and he got booed when he was bashing George W. Bush during his acceptance speech. So, wow.
Yeah, that was like a time where if you said anything against a president, people were like, "You're not American," like the Dixie Chicks type of
mm-hmm.
shit.
Which Weekend Update talks about later on in the show. So yeah, it was a very interesting time.
Yeah, and I do remember like this was the award show that I believe Roman Polanski won for director.
Yes, he won for The Pianist. Roman Polanski, who has been basically exiled himself from the U.S.
Yeah, he's just like I'm out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna go.
Which is a whole, that's just Google Roman Polanski. I don't think we need to open that whole can of worms.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember watching the award show that night, and like a lot of people in the audience didn't seem too happy about that. I remember.
No. Controversial figure, Mr. Roman Polanski.
I think I remember like Nick Nolte in particular was like, no, fuck that dude.
Yeah, yeah, I seem to remember that. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, monologue. Sorry.
Monologue. Salma Hayek comes out. She's saying like, oh, the guys here have been so nice to me this week. So the basic joke is like, oh, she's so hot. Oh my god, look at how hot she is. Oh my god,
they even
she's
had
so
that
hot.
Problem. They had that problem back then.
Yep.
Things never change.
We could have been watching the Sweeney, the Sydney Sweeney episode from a few weeks ago.
So basically it's like all the men are so hot, keep buying me drinks, giving mm-hmm. me massages, a lot of massages.
Yeah.
Which is like, wow, this guy's here are really handsy. And
going back to the Frida thing, again, this is sort of a hindsight 2020 as we know what, I know that when all the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out a few years back.
Oh yeah.
Salma Hayek revealed that she was only able to get the movie Frida made because Harvey Weinstein was a producer on that, or I think it was done through his studio. He said like, oh yeah, I'll only let you make this movie if you have like a nude scene or a sex scene in it. And I'm just like, oh God, that's so fucked up, man.
Oh,
Cause this was like, I think a passion project of hers for years playing this artist and,
right.
And Harvey Weinstein, he was just like, well, you can make it if you show your titty. I mean, just
that's how he talks.
Probably.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, that's his inner monologue at the very least.
Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, like, God, what a monster.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like, oh geez, poor Salma Hayek was, having to deal with this stuff and, had to do that just to get her passion project made. It's just, ugh.
Yeah. I know.
Ugh. Anyway, so Chris Kattan comes out. He's, got a Don Johnson sort of look, with a colored t-shirt and a white jacket, and he comes out and serenades her the old Pat Benatar song, We Belong.
Of course.
Yeah.
If you're going to serenade any woman, it's to Pat Benatar, We Belong.
Yeah, yeah. A song that was like about 20 years old at this point. And yeah. And like, you know, we have like tons of other guys coming out and they've got like keytars and things like that. And
yeah, we have like Tracy Morgan comes out dressed up as like the dude from Cameo, mm-hmm. the Word Up guy.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Richards comes out with like a Flock of Seagulls haircut and he just kind of does a little dance.
Yep.
On the side.
Yep. Yep.
He's not even playing anything.
Yeah. And they congratulate her on her Oscar nomination. And we find out there that Chris has this this Pat Benatar cover band called Shadows of the Night, named after another Pat Benatar hit.
Another banger.
Yeah. And then she's like, you know, well, thank you, Chris. I'm very flattered, but I'm just not interested. And, you know, the band kind of disperses. And, you know, there's one guy with like long matted hair and sunglasses, and he's just kind of wandering off, and Salma Hayek stops him, and oh my goodness, it turns out it's Ed Norton in disguise.
That's right, Ed Norton, because at this time the two of them were an item.
Yeah, I'd honestly forgotten that they'd ever dated.
Yeah, I mean, hey, my man.
This was
kudos to you, sir.
Ed Norton was, and I don't know what his situation is now. I don't know if he's single or married or in a relationship or what, but yeah, he was like one of those Hollywood bachelors for a little while where he, I know he dated Courtney Love and I know he dated Salma Hayek. And I feel like there was at least another famous person he dated for a while there.
I'll look it up.
I meant to look it up and I forgot to.
I'll look it up. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. I remember Edward Norton's dating history being quite.
Yeah. Yeah. In like the late 90s, early 2000s, after he became famous, he was dating around for a while. And yeah. And he's like speaking in a British accent. He has a little back and forth with Salma Hayek. And he's saying like, yeah, we formed this band. We've been rehearsing for 5 weeks. And she's like, oh, I can't believe it. And he's like, what, that we'd go to these lengths? And she's like, no, that you've been rehearsing for 5 weeks. You're awful.
So yeah, that was kind of funny. It's like, yeah, you guys suck.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, everybody comes back on to like, you know, quote unquote, play the song again. And I like that Norton put his wig back on.
That Howard Stern long wig.
Yeah, that was a nice touch. That was a nice touch.
Okay, so Edward Norton, he was. All right, so it looks like he is married now to Shauna Robertson. Shauna Robertson.
Okay. She's a screenwriter, I think, right?
Shauna Robertson, I believe.
The name's familiar. Yeah.
I believe so. But yeah, she was. He was engaged to Courtney Love. Then he was dating Salma Hayek and Brianna Bell and Drew Barrymore.
Oh, Drew Barrymore. Oh, I'd forgotten that. Okay. Yeah. So then, Salma Hayek was after Courtney Love.
Salma Hayek was after. Yes.
Okay. All right. So, you know, now you know where we are in the Ed Norton dating history.
Yes. Right. And he was rumored to have hooked up with Evan Rachel Wood and Cameron Diaz. So,
okay.
There you go.
All right.
Hot goss.
Well, there we go. And I think Salma Hayek's married now, too. I think she has a few kids now.
Yeah, she's correctly. Married to some, like, billionaire, I want to say, or something.
Yeah.
Some dude with dough.
Anyway, so what'd you think of the monologue?
It's cute enough, I guess.
Yeah, it was cute enough. It was like, yeah, I don't know if they really knew what to do with her outside of the, oh my gosh, she's so hot.
Yeah, I mean, this really kind of reeks of, we don't, like, she, of course, she's not just that, her look,
yeah.
She's many other things, she's many other facets, but it really feels like they didn't know how to tap in into any of those other things, or maybe even want to.
yeah. So is it a failure of imagination? Is it bro culture? Is it a little of both?
A little bit, yeah. But I mean, also at the same time, it has Pat Benatar, We Belong, so that'll always win me over. I like Pat Benatar, We Belong.
Excuse me. I mean, The Saturday Night Live guys are basically the butt of the joke because, you know, they're making asses of themselves because, you know, she's so attractive. So, I mean, I feel like they're aiming the jokes in the right direction, but yeah, at the same time, you kind of wish they could have come up with something else, but I don't know.
Absolutely. And yeah, so just so everybody knows, yeah, Salma Hayek is married to François-André Pinault, who is the CEO of Kering.
Kering, the coffee company?
CEO Kering. No, French-based multinational corporation specializing in luxury goods. It owns the brands Gucci, Balenciaga, Bottega Veneta. Yves Saint Laurent.
Okay, we're getting into the weeds here.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
She's married.
Yeah, dude's got dough. All right, okay, done.
Married a rich guy.
Yeah. All right. So yeah. So the next sketch that comes after this is a sketch that we really can't talk about because it's not on Peacock, but it's the Top of the Morning sketch, which I vaguely remember these.
It's like, yeah. Yeah, they did this a few times, and yeah, because on the Peacock recording, it goes right to TV Funhouse, and it's kind of weird to go to a pre-tape bit right after the monologue, so I was thinking, yeah, this must be where the missing thing is.
Right, so the Top of the Morning sketches, they basically had Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers as two Irish guys doing, like, I guess, like a talk show inside an Irish bar, and, you know, just getting drunk and doing Irish things and saying everything with an Irish accent.
Right. Because we're right around St. Patrick's Day at this point. So.
Exactly. So so this one, I mean, there's not much I can say about it. Like, I just know there's a, what is there, like a viper on the jukebox, according to the pictures I'm seeing off here.
Okay.
And it ends with Selma Hayek getting angry and smashing holes into walls.
Well, okay. That sounds entertaining.
Right. So there you go. So let's go to the TV Funhouse.
TV Funhouse. This was based on a show I had totally forgotten existed.
Same.
It was a reality show called Are You Hot? And this was a real show, right?
It was a real show on ABC.
I don't think it lasted very long, did it?
Lasted one season, got taken off for low ratings. And also, from what I remember, because I looked it up on Wiki, but I remember it too. Like Howard Stern sued the show because Howard Stern was kind of doing something like this on his radio show.
Right.
Like where he was like rating, like people would come in and like him and a panel of other people would like kind of rate these people's looks. And
well, I remember like sometimes women would come on the Stern show and he would tell them like if he thought they had a shot of being like a Playboy Playmate or something like that.
Right, right.
And this reality show had Lorenzo Lamas as a judge. And I think, like, Lorenzo Lamas in this thing, he has a laser pointer. And didn't Stern do the same thing?
I believe so, yeah. So, but yeah, but I mean, when this show came out, it was basically on the heels of American Idol. When American Idol became huge and the juggernaut that it became. Like, I remember, like, a lot of other networks were like, oh, we want our own American Idol, too.
Right.
So, like, you see, like, a lot of other shows coming out around that time trying to be, like, American Idol.
And they hadn't come up with The Voice yet, so.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, even down to, like, the three judges. Like, there was one judge that was, like, a Randy Jackson type. One lady judge, like, Paula Abdul. And then another judge, like, Simon Cowell, who would be, like, the mean cutting, like a snarky judge.
Right, and I think that's what Lorenzo Lamas was on this show, or, you know, just judging from this TV Funhouse thing. And the gag here, because this is an animated thing, he's just doing this to various animated characters. So, he's got Betty Boop, and he's like, well, you know, your head's too big, you don't have a chin. you know, his Popeye comes out and he's, you know, fixating on Popeye's huge forearms. We see the Disney version of Cinderella and she's like in a bathing suit and instead of an evening gown. And he's like, well, hey, you look incredible. And
yeah, like he said, like, oh, my pumpkin isn't turning into a pumpkin. He says some really gross.
He does. Because apparently Lorenzo Lamas was really gross on this show. And oddly enough, like a little earlier this week, I was watching a thing. Like A&E had a show called like Secrets of Playboy. And one of the episodes I was watching, like they were talking to one of the playmates who had been married to Lorenzo Lamas. So I'm like, it's weird that I've thought about Lorenzo Lamas twice in 1 week.
Yeah, he's making a comeback, baby.
I don't think he is. I think I just coincidentally happened to come across two old things featuring Lorenzo Lamas. But
in your mind, he's making a comeback.
It is TV's renegade. So we also had olive oil, strawberry shortcake, droopy dog.
Yeah.
Marvin the Martian. I like that he told Marvin the Martian to lay off the tanning.
Like, you've made me angry.
Dagwood from the Blondie comic strip. Optimus Prime.
Nice.
Yosemite Sam, who, of course, had a lot of back hair and lost points because he's only 3 feet tall. And lastly, Barney Rubble.
Who, right. And yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, yes. And then I think he asked Barney to take off his outfit, his loincloth, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then we see Barney in tidy whities with the big old bulge.
Yeah. Barney Rubble has a big hog, apparently. He's like, oh, well, hey, now I understand the hot wife. So that was cute. It's sort of what you expect from Smigel and J.J. Saddlemeyer. The humor for the TV's Funhouse is pretty defined at this point, I think.
Yeah, I would say so. And then pre-tape ends with Bam Bam throwing around Lorenzo Lamas and, smashing him to the floor like Hulk did with Loki.
Yes.
Just wham, wham, bam.
Yeah, yeah. So, cute idea. Cute idea. Yeah. Nice. a decent way to call out Lorenzo Lamas for being the scuzzy guy that I'm sure that he was on that show.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, I never saw the show, but yeah, like looking back on this, I was like, oh, I guess it wasn't an act. I guess he was really that slimy and like maybe.
He's turning it up a little for the show, but yeah.
Because like, some actors have that reputation, like, Charlie Sheen and Seagal, but I'd never heard of anybody saying like Lorenzo Lamas is like slimy like that. So maybe that's why it kind of took me off guard. I was like, oh, I guess he's a.
Well, let's face it, he wasn't as famous as those other guys. But, it's the point where it's like, you got a laser pointer and you're pointing out. It speaks well of us as a nation that this show did not get good ratings, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the times where I was like, maybe there is some hope for us. Maybe we're going to be okay after all.
Maybe there is hope for us as a nation.
Yeah, and then, of course, it turned out I was completely wrong.
Yeah, yeah, we all were. Nope. Next, we have Versace Oscar Fashion Preview. This was a recurring sketch of Maya Rudolph's where she played the designer Donatella Versace.
Mm-hmm.
I always hated this sketch, honestly.
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, there's not much to it.
Yeah.
She kind of plays Donatella Versace as this kind of always drunk, always smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Kind of always out of it, but also very loud.
You're kind of speaking like Natasha from the old Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons.
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. Moose and Squirrel.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, part of me did get a kick out of the fact, like when she always enters in a place, she has like shirtless men carrying her in to the place. I was like,
good nice. Time to be a male model. You picking up work at SNL in the early 2000s.
That's right. Hit the ab master and get on down to 30 Rock.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this sketch just never spoke to me because I think I barely had any idea who Donatella Versace was before this sketch and probably after, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was. I mean, I always sort of took her as like some type of socialite or.
She was a designer.
Yeah, but. Did she found the Versace line or is she like related to
it? I don't know. I mean, this is where me not watching much of the E! Network has caught up with me.
Okay. All right. You know,
if I ever watch the E Network and if I ever watch Ryan Murphy's shows, I wouldn't have a better understanding of who she was and why she might have been important. But
okay.
Yeah. All I know is she was a designer.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Donatella, Italian fashion designer, businesswoman, socialite, and model. She's the sister of Gianni Versace, founder of the luxury fashion.
Okay. And he was the murdered guy, I know.
Yeah, Gianni Versace. Yes, Giovanni Maria Gianni Versace.
So Salma Hayek is Donatella's head of operations in here, and here she's picking dresses for the actresses to wear at the Oscars.
Yeah, and then off the top of her head, she says, "Oh, Kathy Bates, duvet cover,
right?
Sharon Stone, straight jacket and tights."
Yeah. Amy Poehler and Fred Armisen come in to pick up a dress for Catherine Zeta-Jones. And apparently Donatella was like, oh, she should come in person because she's pregnant now.
Yeah, like that part of the... See, this part of the sketch, I didn't quite understand what was going on. Like, I don't know if it really got there.
Yeah. Like I said, I never thought it was an especially funny sketch.
Okay. But then we have Dean Edwards coming in as Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, wow. Michael Jackson was still alive back then. Holy cow.
He was still alive. And, like, at this point, I think at this point in his life, people kind of, he was kind of like persona non grata, and people were trying to avoid him. Because, like, we see Salma Hayek and Maya Rudolph saying, oh my God, Michael Jackson's here, quick, pretend to be a mannequin.
Right. Maybe he'll just go away. Yeah, I mean, this was, I mean, he hadn't had a hit in a long time, and, you know, there had been all the, I don't know, do we call them allegations? Do we go?
Yeah, let's say allegations.
Yeah.
But so we see Dean Edwards coming as Michael Jackson. And one thing, like, I kind of noticed.
Yeah.
Like, you see, like, he's wearing the makeup on his face to make his skin lighter, and he has makeup on his hands to make his skin lighter. But at one point, he raises his hand, his arm, to wave to somebody, saying, like, yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
But when he does that, you can see, like, the wrist of his hand and below it, that has no makeup on it.
So because this is where I feel like the makeup was so extensive. Dean Edwards wasn't recognizable anymore. And I felt like that was really kind of doing him a disservice, because Dean Edwards, pretty dark skinned black man, and Michael Jackson at this point in time was not. So they were going a long way to try and make him look anything like Michael Jackson. It was a good impression, but I feel like the makeup just took it too far away from what Dean Edwards actually looked like.
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they're, I mean, I get it, because, like, they were trying to make him look as much like Michael Jackson as possible, but in that, they kind of lost
Dean. Yeah, they lost the performer, which SNL doesn't usually do. But this is one where I feel like they fell down on the job a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And then we have our musical guest, Christina Aguilera, come in for a little quick performance, talking about how she needs a dress for an upcoming award show. And Donatella loves Christina so much, she rips the dress that she's wearing off her body and gives it to Christina to reveal herself in a bra top and these big old granny panties that, like, are pulled all the way, like, up past the navel.
Yeah. Yeah. Real baggy. I thought it was interesting. Like, it was pretty obvious that Christina Aguilera wasn't really a practice sketch performer, if for no other reason was she didn't really know how to cheat herself out to the camera, you know?
Yeah.
For like half the time, her head is turned and her hair is just kind of covering her face, so you don't really see her that well. And fortunately, they found a decent camera angle for her, but I was just like, I wish they'd covered that a little better at dress.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, maybe... I don't know. The blocking is a little bit odd on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, she's a musician. She's not an actress. And, you know, actors and actresses, they generally know how to cheat themselves out to camera, where you just kind of, like, you're standing sort of at a diagonal so that they can get a good three-quarter shot of you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, overall, I thought the sketch pretty weak, I guess.
Yeah, I always moments. Thought this was a weak sketch. I mean, this sketch just never did anything for me. I was, you know, like the Donatello Versace show would come on and I'd just be like, ugh, okay, well, let me go get something to drink, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, you could see Maya. I mean, I don't think it's any fault through Maya's performance, because, like, she does kind of give it her all, you know, when she gets loud and screamy and, you know, like, she's in the pocket, but I don't think they were able, the writing on these sketches aren't the strongest.
Yeah, I just always found the character more annoying than funny, so...
Okay, fair enough.
You know, but I don't really care for the fashion world, so it's, you know, it's not really for me. I totally recognize that.
I mean, but John, you're such a fashion icon. This shocks me. Like, you're always decked down in the latest Gucci and Yves Saint Laurent.
Right.
Okay. Next up, it's Box.
The Box, yes. Opens up with... Salma Hayek and Jimmy Fallon on a date.
Yeah.
They're getting into her living room and they're like, hey, this went really well. I think this is the start of something good here. And there's this huge box in her living room. And he's like, oh, what's this? And she's like, oh, no, it's just a package that somebody mailed to my stupid husband.
Right. And little do they know that the package is the stupid husband. Because
right.
We hear Will Forte in the box screaming out, like, I mailed myself to you guys to see if you were cheating on me, and I was right.
Yeah.
And so it's based, and it is Will Forte actually in a cardboard box.
Yes, yes. You hear his voice. I mean, I recognize his voice. And he mailed himself, but the joke is he can't get out of the box. It's taped up too securely. So at one point, he's, like, trying to get towards Jimmy Fallon to, like, beat him up for, you know, going out with his wife. And we had the funny visual of the box just kind of bouncing over to Jimmy Fallon's direction.
Like, the box hops over to him. Yeah. Am I close? Am I near you?
Yeah. Did you notice that, like, they seem to screw up his character name? Like, I think he's called Greg at one point early in the sketch, and then he's later Ray. Ray is the name that's on the box. It was a weird screw up.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, there are some funny parts in here, like when Forte is actually able to get, like, an arm out to fight the guy. And so you just see, like, him swinging wildly, one arm out of a cardboard box, trying to hit Jimmy Fallon. And
then he opens up that hole a little more, and he just sticks his head out of the box. So we just see Will Forte's head sticking out of a box, out of the corner of a box.
Yeah. Visually, there's some good stuff here, I think. Mm-hmm. I thought. But, yeah, overall, I thought the sketch was okay, but wasn't... I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it was very close to being pretty damn good.
Honestly, I didn't really remember anything from this show, from watching it back in the day, which I assume I did. And, you know, then I watched the show, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is why. It's a so-so sort of show. I did like how towards the end they were saying, like, flip you flippin' douche.
They said that a lot. You're like, yeah, you mother flipper.
Yeah. We could see some of Will Forte's sensibilities kind of peeking through and becoming a part of the show. And that was interesting. Like, you know, he's kind of figuring out how to get his voice onto the show.
Yeah, you definitely see, like, this is early Will Forte. Like, you could see, this is like the seeds of, like, what Forte would go on to do. And
right,
this is definitely a good place to see, like, his comedic sensibilities and what he's about.
Right.
Because, like, yeah, I watched this sketch and I get reminded of, like, future Will Forte stuff I see.
Yeah,
like,
later on. It's very much a Will Forte, but it's still sort of a embryonic Will Forte. So
yeah,
it's interesting in that regard.
Absolutely. And I think at one point, like, Jimmy Fallon, like, actually, like, jumps on top of him.
Yeah, that's how it closes, where, you know, with Jimmy Fallon just basically fighting the box, which is interesting. And Jimmy Fallon and Will Forte both kiss Salma Hayek briefly during the sketch, which I'm sure they weren't sorry to do.
Right. And actually, I don't know if you saw it too, but, like, when Jimmy Fallon jumps on the box and the box kind of tips over, you see Forte's back.
And then, yeah, the box is open at the bottom. And yeah, and I was like, why is Forte apparently not have a shirt on?
Yeah, because like he does say in the sketch, oh, I'm not wearing any clothes in here.
I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, but then you see the back and like you see his bare back. So it's like, oh, is he actually well, he's probably wearing underwear or something, but like yeah I didn't know he was like legitimately shirtless.
He's a method actor, apparently.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Well, I mean, hey, Will Forte, not afraid of getting naked for a gag, so.
He is not. Go watch MacGruber, you'll see.
Yeah. All right, so next up we have a Weekend Update with Jimmy Fallon and Tina Fey.
Fey.
I was so happy when I realized we could still do that gag.
The joke continues on.
I was like, oh, how should we say their names? And I was like, wait, Fey rhymes with Che. Oh my God, we can still do it.
Kalu Kalay.
That made me happier than it should have.
Oh boy.
So yeah, this is, you know, of course, because they're reporting on the news of the day, this was a real time capsule part of the episode. You know, like Congress is voting on whether or not to go to a war with Iraq. They're saying that, you know, French fries and French toast have been changed to freedom fries and toast in the congressional cafeteria. And I'm like, God, I wonder if they're still built like that. You think they still have that happening?
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah, I wonder when they changed that back.
But yeah, freedom fries.
I remember that being a thing for about a year, though, and I mean, I thought it was stupid then, but I remember it being a thing.
I do too.
Because like France didn't want to go to war with Iraq and our quote unquote coalition of the willing, and so in defiance we said, oh, they're no longer French fries. They're freedom fries.
Right. Get all them French things out of here. Get the French wines and the French kissing. Get it all out. It's all America kissing.
God, we're stupid.
We really are. Really are.
We are dumb. We are dumb, dumb people.
We are not the brightest. We're not the sharpest tool in the shed. Looking kind of dumb with the finger and the thumb in the shape of an L on our forehead.
Well said, sir. Yeah, so the joke here was that, you know, France was now calling American cheese idiot cheese. And at the end we have the great, like, great Don Pardo saying, this has been Jimmy and Tina yelling at America.
Wow, yeah.
It was kind of funny to, you know, like, it's weird to think of Jimmy Fallon editorializing about anything, you know?
Yeah, he's like, it's Jimmy Fallon. Everything's great to him.
Like, yeah, I feel like it's just him performing Tina Fey's editorial voice, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Tina Fey wrote this piece and then Jimmy Fallon was just performing half of it.
Yeah, very much. It's like, say these words.
Yeah. He's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, can I just tussle Donald Trump's hair instead? That's more my speed.
Shut up. Just say my words, Fallon. Say my words, pretty boy, and I'll let you sing a song at the end of this.
Yeah. They also reported on, you know, apparently this was a thing that had just recently happened, was the Dixie Chicks said that they were ashamed that the president of the United States was from Texas.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that led to the, you know, that whole Dixie Chick backlash. I don't know if their careers ever really recovered after that.
I mean, they're still out there. They're still doing it.
They are. But they certainly aren't the phenomenon that they once were.
No, unfortunately not. Like, I see what you mean. Like, it is something where they took a huge hit from their country fan base because they didn't, I guess, pander to what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, because I think it's safe to say that, you know, that they're much more left-leaning than a lot of the typical country fans. So a lot of their fan base were alienated by that.
Yeah. They're all woke.
Yeah.
Can't have no woke chicks.
Yeah.
Or Moravia.
Yeah, but, you know, hey, I will give them to this. They stuck to their guns. They put their money where their mouth was, and they didn't back down from that, as I recall.
Yeah, no, I applaud them for what they did, because it's one of those things where they felt one way. They knew if they expressed what they felt, it would really hurt them with their audience, but they went ahead and did it. Like, I think I remember hearing somebody say, like, that's one of the most punk rock things anybody could do.
And yeah.
Like, I agree. They had more balls than most, like, punk rockers and rappers and rock artists claim to have. like what they did took some real guts.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, this is like the same time that we had, what's his name? The country music star just recently passed away.
Who is that? Oh, Toby Keith?
Toby Keith. Yeah. You know, and this is the same time, you know, Toby Keith was doing the, you know, we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. And, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, America, we're going to put boot in your ass if you're big. We're big and tough. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, Ford Broncos. And
yeah. So, I was just like, wow, it's, you know, it's weird that this is like, you know, on the week that this was happening. Next, we had a death segment with Fred Armisen's character, Ferocito. And this time, Salma Hayek is playing his new wife, Lupe.
Yeah, like, I mean, the way you feel about the Donatella Versace, I kind of always felt about this.
Ferocito.
So, yeah, because like, I know, I mean, this is probably one of the first times Armisen's ever done it because he's a feature player. But like, I know he's done it before later on in his tenure. And they've always kind of fallen flat with me. Like, I understand what he's, like, parodying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like those, like those Univision comedians you see on like Telemundo and whatnot.
Yeah.
That, you know, that like kind of say these corny one-liners and mug into the camera. Like, ay, Dios mío. Like, I get it, but it never, I'd be like, all right.
I mean, Ferocito, he's one of those characters. I don't think I minded him in a big way. I think I got a little sick of him because Armisen went to that well a lot. And it's one of those sketches where it's like, it's pretty much the same thing every time around, you know?
Yeah. He never like switched it up really. It just,
yeah.
You know, he's like, it's like an AC/DC song. It's just like, you know what you're going to get. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be this and this.
Yeah.
It's going to give you this amount of laughs.
Yeah.
And the end. And that's it. Original recipe all the way. Nothing's changing here.
Yeah, I did like that Ferocito was trying to convince Jimmy and Tina to get married. You know, that they should get married if they want to be a comedy duo, like Lucy and Desi, or Howie Long and Terry Hatcher. Because like Howie Long and Terry Hatcher were doing some series of commercials together at this time for some reason. Right.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I don't even remember what they were advertising anymore. But it was one of those commercials where it's like, you know, just this random couple who aren't a couple in real life, but they seem to be sort of a couple in the commercial. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like, oh, I'm really going to date myself here, but you remember those camera commercials that James Garner did with Marriott Hartley?
Oh.
They were so popular, and those two had such chemistry together that lots of people thought that they were married in real life.
Oh, like Canon? The Canon cameras?
Yeah, I don't remember what brand of camera it was, but they were doing these camera commercials and they had great chemistry together and lots of people thought they were married for real. And I think that's kind of what they were going for with Howie Long and Terry Hatcher back then.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Got it. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Wow, that's quite a tangent we've gone. But I like it.
Yeah, but I was like, oh yeah, I vaguely remember that they did commercials together. I don't know what for, but
I want to say Verizon, but I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, let's say Verizon.
Sure.
And speaking of the World Wide Web, they had a joke a little after this where Tina Fey was saying the phrasing just really struck out at me. She was like, you know, people are using search engines like google.com to contact their ex-girlfriends and boyfriends online. And I was like, search engines like google.com. That really shows you where we were in 2003, where we had to first identify it as a search engine and then say google.com.
People went to www.google.com.
http ://
Oh my god.
I just, you know, one calling it google.com and then search engines like google.com. I was just like, That's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Like another thing I noticed was like I think this is maybe a mark of the Tina Fey era, is they were structuring the setups of their jokes much more like news items here. Oh. And like it wouldn't really get absurd until they got to the punchline. Did you notice that?
It was
like a much drier setup.
I think so. Wow, I didn't even notice that.
I don't know. It about halfway through, it just kind of struck me that they were being much more restrained, and they were trying to be much more like actual newscasters, which was kind of used to be the way a lot of people did Weekend Update, and it's not really the style that Jost and Shea use today. I mean, you know, Jost will be like, Mitch McConnell seen here watching a puppy drowning, or you know, something like that. Like he has that absurdity in the setup. Whereas Tina Fey would just be like very normal, dry setup and then have the twist and the punchline. I don't know. Yeah, just something that stuck out at me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Because like, I know like Dennis Miller kind of played with the format a little bit. And Norm. Yeah. So you think like them coming off the tail end of that, then be like, oh, we should play with the format too. But it seems like they didn't do that.
Yeah, well, I think Dennis Miller was the first guy to really break away from the, you know, I'm an actual newscaster doing the news. He was just like, no, screw it. I'm just Dennis Miller.
I'm Dennis Miller, babe.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'm a news, my Walter Cronkite over here.
Yeah. And then it became a much more personality driven thing.
That's a good point. Wow.
And Tina Fey really, at least in her early days, she really seemed to bring back that, you know, we're doing the news thing. You know, she was more in the Jane Curtin mold, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But what were we talking about? Frocito and Lupe. Yeah, so I didn't write too much about that. It was pretty.
Oh yeah, no, I was pretty much done with them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then after that we had a few more jokes. I think there was the one joke I kind of dug where Tina Fey was talking about how the soap operas are about to have their first lesbian kiss, and that's gave other soap operas the idea to, you know, make their shows more gay friendly. Shows like Port Charles and The Bold and the Beautiful, and of course, Genital Hospital.
Yeah.
Childish. And then of course this whole thing ends with Jimmy Fallon doing what he was born to do. He sings a little medley of St. Patrick's Day songs.
Yeah, he sang a bunch of songs about St. Patrick's Day to the tunes of, you know, other Nose songs like Your Body is a Wonderland, Christina Aguilera is Beautiful. What else? He did a Coldplay song, didn't he?
He did Yellow. That was the one about how, you know, gays couldn't march in the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Right. And then
at one point he said the line, gay guys make better floats, which I was like, what does that mean?
I think that's just a, you know, gay men are fabulous joke.
Oh, yes.
And then he finished it up with covering Eminem's Move Yourself, only it's Puke Yourself.
Yeah.
This was just, I don't know, it was just Jimmy Fallon trying really hard to be Adam Sandler, you know?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, for sure. Like, I think it's one of those things where, when Jimmy Fallon got on the show, I feel like the show thought, oh, this guy, he's like another Adam Sandler. He plays guitar. The college kids like him. He's cute.
Like, yeah. I don't think he had too much of his own identity yet, you know?
No, not really. He was just like the cute young guy that, I called him cute twice. But yeah, he was like the young kid that like plays guitar and is adorable and stuff. So like, yeah. but he was never able to really, and he had a few impressions. I will give him that. He did have a few impressions.
Yeah.
Like if you ever see on his show, like when he does his Neil Young impression, it's really good.
Uh-huh.
But look up him doing a Neil Young impression. It's pretty spot on. And like,
I will not.
Okay. But like, he can do other things, but it just seems like, He doesn't focus on those things more.
He chooses not to.
Yeah, exactly. Like he does have more to him.
No, he does have some comedy chops. And honestly, I mean, when he was doing Update with Tina Fey, that's one of my favorite eras of Update. I think they were a great team and they had a nice kind of chemistry. I think Lauren defined it as like Jimmy was like the dumb kid who had Tina doing his homework.
Yes.
and it worked. And I liked how, And I loved how it transitioned from Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon to Tina Fey and Amy Poehler to Amy Poehler and Seth Meyers and then Seth Meyers. I mean, it was kind of like this long unbroken run.
Yeah, it was a very natural progression. That's the little flow they had there.
Yeah, yeah. It was neat how it sort of handed off from one person to the other to the other. And I know that wasn't really the plan. That's just how it turned out. But I thought it was kind of cool. I could have done. I was never too fond of Jimmy Fallon getting out the guitar and just singing.
Yeah, like as soon as that came on, I was like, all right, this is just for, you know, the college kids and. All right. I think I went up and got a drink or something. But yeah, I guess it's cute enough if that's your type of thing. But
yeah.
Next up, let's go to Seduction Class.
Seduction Class is Salma Hayek. She's teaching a class in the art of seduction at the local YMCA.
Yes, in the basement.
Yes.
The sexiest part of the YMCA.
Oh, yes. I mean, all the sexy stuff happens in the basement.
The Alamo, and, all of it.
Yeah. and she's, you know, she's in like a tight, cut pink dress with fishnets, I think it was, and speaking in a French accent. And then the joke is like, you know, it's all sorts of older people that you'd see taking an annex class at the YMCA. We have Fred Armisen as you know, hello, I'm Gabe. And, you know, speaking in like sort of stereotypical Jewish accent.
Yeah, like Arnold Horshack from Welcome Back, Carter.
Yeah, a bit of that.
Or Ed Koch.
Yeah, very Ed Koch. Mm-hmm. Had Horatio Sands as Vasquez. Rachel Dratch as Ruth, an older woman. And Tracy Morgan as AJ, who wants an Asian he-she.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, can we... like the way, yeah, that's a choice.
It was a very Tracy Morgan character, wasn't it?
Very much so.
I don't think that's a joke that the show would make today.
No. I don't think so. I did like the line where Salma Hayek talks to the students saying, you know, saying what go either here and what they're looking to do. And then Rachel Dratch is like, you know, I'm a very sexually active person, but I'd like to share that with another person.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, that's a cute line.
Yeah. And you know, she has them run through some imaginary scenarios. And she's also like dropping anecdotes about how she's hooked up with people.
In the bathroom of a like gas station and stuff.
Right, right. I don't know. It didn't do a whole lot for me, this sketch.
Yeah, it seemed to kind of meander a little bit. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it seemed like they were kind of trying to figure out where the jokes were and where mm-hmm. the punchlines were as they were doing it.
Yeah.
Type of thing. I mean, I didn't write down too much about this one either, just because, like, I didn't.
No, I mean, it was funny when I think Armisen and Dratch in particular, they were both doing some good character work. I liked how singularly focused Tracy Morgan's character was. You know, he gets up and Salma Hayek's like, okay, well, you know, flirt with Ruth here. And he's like, are you Chinese? No. Are you a he-she? No. All right. Well, I'm not interested in you. And he like walks off.
I'm leaving. I'm a go.
Yeah. It's like, okay, well, you know, he's a man who knows what he wants.
That's right. Know what I want.
So,
but, yeah, like I don't have much to say about this one. Yeah, because it ends with that, and then it ends with Gabe, Fred Armisen's character, successfully flirting with Rachel Dratch's character. Yeah. Like, so, you know, this is very forward of me that I think maybe we should go to the bathroom and maybe you could touch me and I can touch you. And I think it'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Very much. And like, so he's successful, and then like everybody else in the class leaves to go practice their pickup skills at the gas station, I think it was.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't write it down.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have much to say about this one. I thought it was like, there's some interesting things here at play, but it didn't quite come together as I would have hoped it would have.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got a pre-tape.
Yeah, a little pre-tape thing. Talking about another thing, about a news story. This was like not long after terrorist or Al-Qaeda terrorist Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had been captured. And apparently one of the things they found in his headquarters or his hidey hole or whatever was a DVD of the movie Chicago.
Hmm. And, as a matter of fact, they found a lot of memorabilia from the movie Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they were exaggerating it for this bit. I didn't look up this news story, but, but it's Salma Hayek just narrating it and saying like, well, I just want to say that the movie Frida does not support terrorism.
Yeah. That,
you know, so please, Academy voters, vote for Frida.
Yeah, I thought this was hilarious.
It was very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. This came out a week before the Academy Awards.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, this is like one of her big competitors, because she's up against Renee Zellweger for Chicago. Chicago was up for Best Picture, and actually ended up winning Best Picture.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. With this pre-tape, it's basically Salma Hayek saying that Chicago might be in bed with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And
yeah.
If you vote for Frida, you're fighting against terrorism.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's such a funny, absurd claim. Yeah, this is probably the funniest thing in the show for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sketch of the night.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's a quick thing, just only a minute or two. But funny stuff.
Funny, funny stuff. And so then there are 10 to 1.
King Kong, the director's cut.
Cut.
No. So we're screening a director's cut of the classic 1933 movie King Kong. And, you know, so this is shot in black and white. We have Fallon and Sands as two cops. And they're watching Kong climb the Empire State Building. And then they start talking about Kong's genitals.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like, hey, look at that. Oh, well, he's very excited. And then we cut to Tracy Morgan and Salma Hayek as a couple living below in the Empire State Building. And the basic gag is, well, Kong's penis is coming in through their window.
Yeah. Like, I mean, props to the props department on this one. Because, yeah, it is basically like you see like this big, huge, like almost the shape of a carpet, furry thing.
Yeah, a big fuzzy tube.
Yeah, it's going from one end of the apartment to the other. Like it right. sticks out from one window right. to the next.
I mean, there's nothing about it that looks penis-like. Yeah, but it, you know, you just know from context that that's what
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, like you don't see the head or nothing.
Yeah, it's all I mean, the gag is the couple doesn't realize what it is. They're just like, hey, what's this weird thing coming through our window? Hey, let's try to push it out.
Because I think they think that, oh, this is probably a carpet that the upstairs neighbor is trying to move in.
Right.
Let's try to push it out and get it out of our apartment. And of right. course, they use their hand to push it back and forth.
They're moving their hands back and forth on it. And
you know what that means.
We cut back to the cops and they're like, hey, he's getting really excited now. And, you know, at one point, Tracy Morgan leans out the window and he's like, oh, they must be moving all sorts of furniture. There are two fuzzy beanbag chairs out there.
It's like, yeah, let me try to move those out the way.
And yeah.
So, yeah, so they're basically jacking off King Kong.
Yeah, I mean, the sketch is just a one long dick joke, really. In every sense of the term.
Very much so. I thought they were going to go all the way with it and have, like, you know, Fallon and Sands like doused in like some white liquid or something. Like, I don't know how far they're going to go.
Yeah, at one point I was like, are we going to have like, you know, something flooding in from the next room or something like that?
Part of me thinks that maybe somebody stepped in and is like, no, you guys can't do that.
Yeah, that might have been taking it over the line. And yeah, but instead they cut back to the two cops and they're like, hey, now he's making the goofiest face I've ever seen. Now he looks guilty. now he's ripped a cigarette off a billboard and he's I like that. That was some good detail. I liked, you know, that's the goofiest face I've ever seen. Now he looks guilty.
That was written by somebody.
Yeah, that post-orgasm regret. Yeah. That was very funny.
Yeah, that hits still too close to home.
Yeah, and then Daryl Hammond comes in as another cop, and he's like, "Oh, it was Beauty that calmed the beast." Only time we saw Daryl Hammond this episode, I believe.
Yeah, this was it. I was like, "Oh wow, he really." I was hoping to see more of him, but yeah, I guess not.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we.
So that's how King we're Kong. Closing out the night with
King Kong's dick. Yeah.
Yeah, King Kong ejaculation.
Wow.
10-1 land, everybody. It's a wild land. It's
holy moly.
It's a wild west, man.
Oh my god. Yeah, my lord. And it was a different time, guys.
It was a different time.
That's right.
I'm glad I'd already eaten my dinner before I rewatched that sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, it was so stupid and absurd and out there that I kind of liked it. It was.
It was really out there.
It was goofy, but, you know, damn it if it didn't amuse me a little bit.
Yeah, it was really. I mean, I don't see the show taking swings like that now, but it was.
Yeah.
Wowie.
Yeah. And nothing real notable at Good Nights except, you know, we of course see Christina Aguilera and her band. We didn't, you know, Darren and I didn't see them at all because we didn't see any of the musical segments. And Ed Norton apparently wasn't at the Good Nights. So.
Oh, what's up? Oh, did they get into a fight? What happened there?
No, probably just didn't want to be on camera again.
You don't support me.
So
hot goss.
So, you know, what'd you think of this one overall?
Overall, I thought it was okay enough. You know, some of it's, I mean, it was weird to see this cast because, like I said, it is a transition era. So you mm-hmm. see the older era of comedians that are cast members that are still there that are kind of on the way out, and then you see the newer cast members that are still kind of trying to figure it out while they're there. So it's like two sections of cast members still kind of not quite, I don't want to say all there, but like you just see them kind of trying to either figure it out or kind of wrap it up, I guess, in a way. Mm-hmm. But overall, I liked it because you get to see the seeds of what is to come and what they're go on to be. Cast members like Armisen and Myers at this point.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought this episode was okay, I guess. I don't know how I feel about Salma Hayek as a host. I thought she was somewhat decent, but I think her comedic timing in a few places were a little off.
Yeah, I don't feel like she was necessarily anything to write home about as a host, but she didn't embarrass herself either. So.
Yeah, I would say absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I guess the show didn't go to the, oh my gosh, she's really hot. Well, too much.
So yeah.
That was all right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say they did that with the Seduction Class and the monologue, but I guess that those are the only.
Yeah. But really I mean, the gag in the Seduction Class wasn't so much like, oh my gosh, she's hot. I mean, you know, they did play up her attractiveness in that, of course, you know, she's like wearing a low cut thing and all that, but it was more about the goofiness of the characters, and I think they just kind of played Salma Hayek up just to contrast with the everyday looking people in the class.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess that makes
sense. I mean, that was my take on it anyway.
Okay. No, fair enough. Okay. All right, well, that's the episode, guys. Thanks for listening, as always. Do we have any... Let's go to the Twitter, see if any of the our Twitter people.
I don't think we had anything last time I looked. So.
Oh, guys.
So Frank, you can go ahead and edit this little bit out.
Okay.
I think that's about it. Have we announced what we're going to do next week? I don't think we have.
We have not, but we could talk about that quick little review we got on Patreon.
Oh, that's right. Thank you for the reminder of that. We did get a review on Patreon this week. Let me get that up. Yeah, we got a note from Steven, who contributed to the Patreon. We're on non-productive.com. He says, love getting the podcast early. You've become one of my fave. Can't wait podcasts.
Hey.
My favorite can't wait podcast. So thank you very much, Steven. We really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And thank you for contributing to the Patreon. That helps us keep it going. And as Steven said, yeah, when you do contribute to the Patreon, you do get the podcast a little early.
Get it a little early. Get this. It's a nice little treat, a nice little Christmas present under the tree we give you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we appreciate the support. I mean, if you listen consistently, if you tell people about the podcast, that really helps us out. And contributing to the Patreon helps us out even more. So we like, awesome. You know, all the likes, all the retweets, all the shares, all the word of mouth, the reviews. If you want to leave a review for the podcast, that helps us out.
Absolutely. You can leave reviews on whatever your
on Apple Podcasts or
Apple Podcasts, wherever. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, just anywhere you want to leave your review. Just tweet at us and review it. Tell us.
Yep.
Leave it on the Apples or on the Patreon. Just let us know what you think, guys, for the love of Pete.
Yeah, we love getting feedback on the podcast. We love hearing what people have to say.
Absolutely. So.
And you can follow the podcast over on the socials. We're on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. So give us a follow there. Give us a hey, hi, how are you there?
Yeah. How do you do? And as always, you can follow me on all the platforms at Darren Credible, Darin Credible.
Yeah, you just follow him on the platforms. Wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah.
And you can follow me on the platforms at Trumbull Comic. That's TRUMBULL and the word comic. And next week, SNL is off once again next week. So we got to figure out something else to do. I think we figure out something good to do.
Good. Should I say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, we thought about it, and I think we're going to go this route. You know, as many of us know, the late, great Richard Lewis passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we heard this news, I was trying to see, like, oh, did he host SNL? Did he have any SNL connections we could talk about on the podcast? Unfortunately, he has not. But he was in a made-for-TV movie that aired during one of the SNL time slots back in 1979 that was produced by Lorne Michaels, a film called Diary of a Young Comic, directed by Gary Weiss. I did a little research, found out that this is, it's airing, it's on Tubi to stream. So we're like, yeah, let's do that. Let's honor the late, great Richard Lewis, talk about Diary of a Young Comic.
Yeah, I've never seen this. I'm looking forward to seeing this. I you know, first got into Richard Lewis in like the late 80s, I seen his stand-up. I probably saw him on Letterman first, and then a few years after that, he was on the sitcom Anything But Love. I enjoyed that show. That was a good show. And yeah, I came to really enjoy him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him when he was like a young, still somewhat struggling comic, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to do it. Diary of a Young Comic, starring Richard Lewis, produced by Lorne Michaels, directed by Gary Weiss, who was a director who directed a lot of multiple short films for SNL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got a long history with SNL.
Yeah, and he co-directed the Beatlemania spoof All You Need Is Cash. So, next week, Diary of a Young Comic.
All right, so yeah, go over to Tubi and check it out and let us know what you think of it. So we'll see you next week with that. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.